everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two quick sponsors this week I want to mention at the top of the show. Environments for Humans do fantastic conferences. One coming up is going to be in Orlando, Florida. Go to 2013.incontrolconference.com. Dave and I will both be there, so it'll be real fun. That's a good reason to go just there. We'll tell you a little bit more about it later in the show. And lynda.com. Go to lynda.com/shoptalk. Tons of learning materials. Get your first week free with that URL. But let's kick things off for now.
Episode number 53 of the Shop Talk Show, a podcast all about front-end web design and development. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And today, we have a very special crossover. Crossover episode with the... That thing just keeps going. Really awesome, awesome podcast, Frip Frap video podcast, Garen Means and Divya Manian. Manian?
Manian.
Manian.
Yes.
I'll get it one day. I'm sorry.
So they have a video show called Frip Frap, fripfrap.io. Clearly the awesomest top level domain that exists. Get everybody over to IO. Yeah. So, hey, thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Chris.
What's Frip Frap all about? I mean, if nobody's ever listened to it before. I mean, it's full. It's like four. You're four or five or something into it. I listened to them.
Yeah. Not many people knew about it. I think that was not very surprising because we didn't advertise it much. But Garen, do you want to start? Or
I think you should actually talk about it, Divya.
Okay, fine. Fine. So I had this idea for Frip Frap because I was a long-time listener for jQuery, and then I couldn't, like, they stopped recording for a while. So I was like, we should do something. And I know Garen...
Void.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I know Garen and I share some opinions that are like we agree on, and I know we don't agree on some other opinions. So I was like, we should do a talk show kind of a thing. So that's how it got started.
I like that the idea was that you all disagree on some stuff. That makes the best kind of
thing
to listen to. But you're both, it's not, Divya, you do all kinds of other stuff. You were at Opera for a while. That's been a while now. Now Adobe.
Yep.
And a big part of the HTML5 boilerplate, which everybody's heard of that.
I'm using it right now.
And what else? You were kind of worked on this new webplatform.org thing, right?
No, I'm just in the video. Oh, God.
There's a video? I haven't even seen it.
Oh, okay. Well, there is a video where my face appears for, like, 2 minutes, maybe? Yep.
Just in slow motion. It's just.
But Adobe is a part of it, and you work for Adobe, right?
So definitely. Yeah, Adobe has been contributing big time for webplatform.org, including the design and a lot of the content.
Is that right? This is Adobe designed. Cool.
Yeah.
So what is it?
So webplatform.org was an initiative that's by the W3C and a lot of other companies, including Adobe, Google, Microsoft, and even Mozilla is participating. And so we want webplatform.org to be like the single resource for documentation on web technologies. So... Microsoft contributed the content they had in MSDN, and I think a lot of other companies also did the same. Plus, we are trying to ramp up on having references for CSS properties. and well, things are going on, and I think it's taking off. There's a lot of doc sprints that happen as well. Like, there's a doc sprint that's going to happen in Berlin at the Adobe offices in Berlin. And previously, there was a doc sprint in Google, in SF, I think, yeah.
Cool. Meaning, like, a bunch of people get together and just get as much of documenting done as they can in some period of time?
Yep.
Cool. So the idea being, like, if I want to look up some information about history.pushstate, this hopefully at some point will be like the canonical resource. So it has all the best stuff for that.
Yep.
Yep. Cool.
Yep.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's a big, I think we've never talked about it in this depth, and I'm not sure how long you wanted to talk about it or whatever, but I find it all pretty interesting that Mozilla's on board, and I think the closest competitor, if there is such a thing, is MDN, because it's pretty good at having stuff. But like, if you go look up history.pushstate, its page for history.pushstate is probably a little better at the moment
than
the one on webplatform.org.
Yep. MDN had a blog post talking about what's their initiative or why they have participated in the webplatform.org efforts. And I think that explains, you know, their perception of webplatform.org.
Well, I should check that out.
Yeah, I think the TLDR is they expect webplatform.org to be, in the future, the reference, but they are going to be actively maintaining MDN while webplatform.org gets there.
Okay.
Yeah. It's after conversations with Janet from MDN, it was... it just seems like web platforms may be something for everyone to chip into, while, you know, MDN's very Mozilla specific.
Yep.
You know, like, I don't know.
They try Adobe not to be Mozilla specific.
But... Right, right. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. You know, Apple doesn't want their Safari engineers contributing to a Mozilla blog or something like that. You know?
Possibly. I think a lot of people have the same concern. I think Opera is a big contributor to webplatform.org as well. Like, Chris Mills works on it, like, being an editor and community person, I think. So.
Well, let's all hope that it becomes as awesome as everyone wants it to become, because it would be.
Yeah.
And Garen, you are from Austin. I've never met you before, and I was and Dave's like, oh, you've never. I mean, she's like rules the school around Austin. I was like, oh, I never have, I guess. But that's, you live in Austin and then work for Etsy.
Yeah,
is that right?
Exactly.
So, and Garen runs the All Girl Hack Night in Austin, which is now two nights. You run or help run Girl Develop It around town. Which is like meeting multi-monthly now.
Yeah, we have a crazy schedule this quarter, so to speak.
Pretty awesome. Like,
that is awesome. You hear about that all over, because we've had Jen Lucas and Allison Wagner work on Girl Develop It too, but in Philly.
Yeah.
So it's a national thing.
Well, it's actually it's international. I think maybe just nominally, because I think that Ottawa may still be our only official city outside the U.S., but...
Oh, that totally counts.
That makes it international, I think.
Yep.
And there was Sydney at one point, but I don't know if anybody's actually...
I think even Alaska counts.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been to Alaska. I've been to Ottawa, so, yeah.
Very cool. And so, Frip Frap, like, we talked about it just a bit, but you both are very, like, high-level... engineers. You're very good at what you do, or you do front end. You both do front end, but you're very, like, very accomplished at JavaScript. And so would you say FripFrap has a bit of a higher technical, you know, kind of bar than, say, podcasts with fart sounds?
I think you can have both, really. We just don't really have a soundboard like you guys do.
Yeah. No, I really like it, and I listen to Frip Frap to learn things. I love it. So, yeah, very cool.
I think we've tried to talk a little bit more about, like, specs and, like, like TC39 stuff and, like, a little bit less about, like, you know, like cool plugins and stuff like that, because that stuff gets a lot of attention, and then like it's easy to to miss some of the drier spec stuff when it's still in that format.
Yeah, I think it's just things that we like, and for invariably we seem to be liking specs and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Specs and frameworks, or do you kind of steer away from frameworks, plugins? Oh. No plugin of the week.
No plugin.
No.
That's somebody else's jam. That would be.
Yeah.
We need something like that, though. We need like a working draft of the week, or
Proposal of the week.
That was so awesome. Yay, query.
Yep.
Oh, a little bit of news. Not so much, but it was either last week or the week before. Maybe we mentioned that someone was looking for a job and they were hoping to find a job board that only listed jobs in which you could work remotely. And I don't even know who's behind this or if it's related to that or what, but there's now a remotejobs.io, and it's just a splash page, but it says it's coming soon and it's got a cool logo. So keep your eye on that if you liked that idea when we talked about that the other week. And it looks like just today there's a new jQuery.com.
It's not
super duper brand new, because some of the sub pages of jQuery, like jQuery UI and stuff, were already using it. So it's kind of been a slow rollout, but this was the big day, was the when actual jQuery.com flipped over. So it's new, and you know, I'm sure they're willing to take bug reports and anything. Not that I have one or that it needs it, but it you know, any new site, I always worry for the people who launched it, because of all the people that are going to be like, "What? This thing is wrong."
Whatever. Yeah. Well, so I want to kind of dive in here. We've got quite a bit of hot drama to talk about. Man, what a week. It just, you know what's beautiful about the internet is it allows us to keep going. We can depend on weekly drama. So hot off the presses is Automattic WordPress, those guys who make WordPress, versus everyone else on the internet.
I wonder if we're framing it wrong already, because some of it has been like, it's not Automattic, it's really the WordPress Foundation.
Okay.
Point is, it's the people behind WordPress.org, the software that you run on your site to power it.
Mm-hmm. So I'll kind of try to sum it up as quickly as possible. WordPress throws these events like conferences, WordCamp, and stuff like that. And they basically said, hey, Envato, maker or maintainers of Theme Forest and all those toot
Code
sites.
Canyon.
Yeah. So they basically like said, hey, you guys aren't invited because like you are dual licensing your themes when we require everything to be GPL. That's like a big thing about WordPress, right?
Apparently GPL and GPL only.
Yeah. So, but Envato and these people, theme makers, like professional theme makers, have decided that they want to protect the people who, the creative work, the CSS and the assets and the JavaScript, with a dual license. So like all your PHP is GPL. So that meets that requirement, but all your assets are, on the marketplace's license. Like basically people can't steal the theme and sell it to everyone. So anyway, the WordPress has some problems with that. So I don't know.
Drama around this. They've always been not pleased with anything other than GPL, and they have some pretty legit reasons for it in general. But it does seem a little weird that their striking move is you can't come to our party. You can come, but you can't talk or organize one.
Right. Garen or Divya, do you have any like thoughts or feelings? Do you have any visceral opinions on this?
I read just one post on it, and I didn't follow the back and forth, but it seemed strange to me for the reason that you just mentioned. Like, that's it's like, it isn't the point of GPL to create, like, it's like an open source thing, right? It's like, the point is to create a community and then to be like, it seems sort of anti-community.
I think it lives with the code no matter what. Like, if you build on it, the thing that you built is also open source in the same way.
From what this is my opinion of GPL, but I thought GPL was something that is very strongly for freedom and not for community. So I guess that's this is my distinction in my head. If you were looking for a community license, maybe you would go for MIT or Apache 2. I don't know. This is my superstition, so it could be wrong, but that was my view. But yeah, it's a bit strange that you would go after the party or the communities. I don't know. It's weird. This is the first time I'm hearing about it, so, well. Yeah.
It's okay. I mean, I think that's right, though. Chris Wallace has a pretty good wrap up on the idea. We'll put that in the show notes that kind of explains it. And it's weird in that everybody involved says, what is there a solution to this? And everybody's like, no, not really.
Wow.
Matt Mullenweg says no, Envato says no, Chris Wallace, who's commenting on this, says no, the Next Web has an article on it, they're like, there's no solution, it's just kind of like the way it is. Envato's probably not going to budge because they can't, the theme they put in place is like vital, kind of, if it wasn't there, you could just download Envato themes and start your own marketplace and sell the themes on a different marketplace. That's not acceptable to them. A business model, and apparently it's not acceptable from the automatic side either, so it's weird that they can't come to the party anymore, and it's weird that there's absolutely no solution to this, but that's what makes it such good hot drama, I guess.
Yeah,
wow.
It's a pickle that makes it the juiciest of all hot dramas. Also in the open source realm, Heather Arthur, Hearth Vader, is that right? On Twitter, she posted a very, very, I found it heartwarming and also scathing article. Garen, you actually originally linked to it for, at least from my perspective on Twitter. Maybe you can kind of sum up what happened there. Do you have?
Yeah, I've been sort of following that, perhaps more actively than I should. It's not really my business, but whatever. Heather had this plugin or this command line utility that was, I think, about 2 years old. It's just like a little command line utility for Node. It just does regex searches with JavaScript. It's useful. A few people, several people had started it. Some people, I don't know who actually started it, but some people found it who were not in the Node community and just like flat out dissed it. I think that the one that I saw was from a guy whose last name I can't pronounce, but I think his words were something along the lines of, I can't even, or I don't even know what to say about this, just like super dismissive, like I don't know, and pointless, like not giving any feedback on like, why is this wrong or what horrible evil is this NPM module doing in the world. Just like, I don't know, just kind of, it was just like a diss, like it was just like a straight up diss. And, and there were more responses to along those lines, like people talking about, this is why I don't like Node, which is, I don't think it's got anything to do with that. And then people like calling those people out for kind of being nasty for no reason, and not being very good open source community members. So that was my impression of how it went down.
Yeah, it's important to note, I mean, straight off the bat, that those guys apologized and it seems very sincere. It's probably important to note also, they were not being misogynists. They were just being jerks, which is rare in these days.
Good job, tech community.
We won one. what I thought, the kind of like last paragraph of Heather's article is just like, you know, I advocate open source all the time, and you know, if somebody was like, hey, I'm just a noob and I'm getting involved in open source. Like, should I? She's now like, well, if you like scathing feedback, sure, that sounds good. But yeah, I don't know if I can.
Bummer about this.
Yeah, that's
a tweet. I can't even make this up, and it points to your thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's and I mean, I don't, maybe we can all have a confession here. I personally probably tend to be a little judgmental of things, but for whatever reason, I try to hold my tongue as best as possible. But I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, is there like? I mean, we should have the freedom of speech, right? But I mean, do we need to watch our tone? What do you guys think?
I think a little bit of professionalism is something good to keep in mind. Like, I'll confess, I have totally like ragged on other people's projects for no good reason. There are some alternatives to JavaScript that I have not said nice things about in the past, purely because I don't like them on an aesthetic basis and not for any practical reason. So I'll apologize for that. And yeah, it's like there are professional ways to say that if you have something constructive to say, and like catching yourself if you don't have something constructive to say and just STFU is perhaps a good policy.
Yep.
Divya?
I would like to tell a small story of how I dissed someone and how I got flamed in return as well. Which is why I don't talk much about other people's projects. I'm very judgmental, and I'm very quick to judge. So I saw this article on 24 ways about using music cadence to repeat patterns in your backgrounds or whatever. I found that a bit too pretentious and also very thin connection. And then I said, I would like to have whatever this person is having when he wrote this blog post on 24 ways. And I said that it on Twitter. It was pretty nasty to say. And then I realized it a bit later that it was not the right thing to say. And I apologized and I took back the tweet and everything. But then I got flamed by all pretty big people, like I think Andy Clark, Jeremy Keith, and I'm not sure, a few others, who were like calling for me to be fired from Opera when I was working there because I expressed this opinion. And there was some, I think CSS Squirrel posted a cartoon about...
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
You got squirreled.
Ah. Yeah, and I was represented as a Viking serial killer. And
Ow.
Yeah. So all of that happened, and I'm like, since then, I know I should probably never state an opinion that insane. Yes.
is it not to dwell on a painful experience perhaps, but is it, do you like, are you when I do something like that, it's hard to decide whether I learned something from it or if I'm not going to do it again just because that sucked and I don't want to get slapped again, or am I like a better person because of it now, you know? Like, I can't even tell.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, I know that that's not professional, and it crossed the line. So that was my point of view, and I make sure that I don't do that. The other thing is I try to not follow people who indulge in perpetuating more drama, because that makes me want to participate more in drama, so...
So are you unfollowing Shop Talk right now? I apologize. No, but that's true. Yeah. It's who you surround yourself with, right? Like, I mean, if you buy into a troll or, God forbid, a mega troll, you know who I'm talking about. Chances of you like picking up these like micro behaviors and these like lack of professionality is huge, you know?
Yeah.
So
you are who you follow.
You are who you follow. T-shirt.
Yeah.
Well, okay, that's enough of that, huh? We have a bunch of Q&A.
Yeah, we got to get into the meat and potatoes of Shop Talk Show.
We do, but it's been a minute here, so let me do the Environments for Humans one. I want you to go to the URL, 2013.environmentsforhumans.com. Oh, that's the wrong one. That environmentsforhumans.com is the company that puts it on, but the URL is 2013.incontrolconference.com. It's in Orlando, Florida, which is really nice. So if you live in the northern half or two-thirds of this country where that means it's very cold in the winter, Orlando is a lovely place to be. And it's kind of a nice city anyway. A lot of people associate it with Disney World, but it's actually got a pretty good tech scene, and it's just kind of a nice city, surprisingly, for being like right in the middle of Florida, which is a weird place for a city to exist. But anyway.
You like swamps, bro?
It's a great conference. This will be my third year going to it. It's a good lineup. Looks like Carl Smith, who's always hilarious, is headlining it. Both me and Dave will be there. It's at this nice hotel, and the hotel and the venue is at the same place, which is one of my favorite things. Did I mention I'll be there again? Anyway, I think there's a coupon code. There's a coupon code ShopTalk. Try if we've convinced you and you're going to come to Florida, which is a good decision and you're not going to regret it. Try the coupon code ShopTalk, and I think that might be $100 off, but I saw somebody tweet one that was Escape Winter that's $200 off, so you should just try and see if you can use both or or use the one that ever gives you the most discount, because that's what we're about. So hooking y'all up. Anyway, yeah, Orlando, Florida, middle of February. It's going to be sweet. We'll see you there. Let's do questions. We have one from Rachel Neighbors, who me and Dave met while in Hawaii, who's big into illustration and does comics, but also CSS3 stuff, and has a question directly for Garen.
Here we go.
Hello, this is Rachel Neighbors calling in for Garen Means. Garen, I follow your blog posts and Etsy's developer blog and see that you do a lot of automated JavaScript testing. I wanted to know, how did you get started with testing? Was it out of curiosity or necessity? And how has it changed your understanding of building and maintaining JavaScript systems? I will take your answer off the air. Thank you very much.
That was professionally done. JavaScript testing, I mean, something we probably don't talk enough about here on Shop Talk, but Garen, you're big into testing, I assume, and how'd you get started?
I think more of the credit goes to Etsy for that. I am not the JavaScript tester I would like to be yet, but Etsy automates basically everything we do. We're really into graphs. I think we have a graph for every single part of our website, like at the most minute level. So naturally we want graphs, like, or some sort of other automation telling us when tests are failing and like coverage and everything else. Me personally getting started with it, mostly involved, as far as that context, going to work at Etsy. So I don't have a really cool origin story about JavaScript testing.
Maybe just what is she talking about at all? What does JavaScript testing even mean?
Let's take a step back.
That's deep, though. what does it mean? There's unit testing, there's functional testing. You can do one or both.
It's kind of like if I click this happens. Which type of testing is that? Like, if I click this div better be on the page, and I want to like assert that happens. Like, I'm pretty new to this too, but we're starting to do some of it on CodePen too. Not only some, but kind of a lot. Trying to get to that point where every feature we write a little test for it. But isn't some of it kind of like simulating clicks and events and stuff, and making sure that stuff happens?
Yeah, and that's like the more functional end of it. Like, you know, unit testing is unit testing. You know, you have some code and you unit test it. Why am I not able to explain things well right now? yeah,
there's a whole other side of this that isn't unit testing. A different kind.
Yeah. So there's. I am not an expert on this, so I feel.
Divya, aren't you involved in Test the Web Forward? Or is that?
Yes.
Maybe you can chat in.
Damia, save me. Okay.
Wait, what am I supposed to save you from?
Functional versus unit testing. Let's break it down. Like, how what do are these explain? Two, and how do they work? Like, generally,
I literally
for JavaScript.
Didn't even know. I don't know that there's a difference. So, if you,
well, unit testing tests whether one. I don't know. I thought it's the most micro of all tests that you could do. Like, whether a particular value is of the type that you say it should be, or whether it should be zero or within the limits. I don't know. This is my understanding. And functional is a little more broad, where you test the actions that are supposed to happen. This is my... Clearly, I'm not doing a very good explanation of this. But at Test the Web Forward, what happens is that we'd be testing the specs. So... So for example, you have the background color property in CSS, and it takes a certain set of values. So what we do is to test, write a test that will, it's a unit test. It'll test whether, what happens in browsers when you give it an invalid value. So do all browsers fail the same way? Or do they behave differently? Or what happens if you give the right value? Do they all behave the same way?
And so if I say, like, background color X, body background color X, it should just fail, you know, like...
Yeah, they should behave the same way.
Maybe in some crazy browser it turns red and you'd be like, what?
Yeah, so that would be a unit test, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And then a functional test is more like, I don't know.
Can
a user log in?
Or,
Yeah,
shopping cart.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, so.
I see.
Are we there, Chris?
Totally.
All right. So, Garen, you're saying you kind of got into unit testing out of necessity. Is that right?
Well, the unit testing that I've done at Etsy, I mean, I don't take any credit for that existing or anything like that. That was there. We already have Jasmine tests that are tied into the whole deployment process, and it's pretty slick.
So the last part of Rachel's question was, how has it changed your understanding of building and maintaining JavaScript systems? What has it made it easier? Do you think you understand JavaScript better now? Is there anything like that going on?
Through testing?
Yeah, just through testing.
I don't know. I think actually linting, like, probably becomes more useful, like, because testing, you're really testing, like, the logic that you're using as a programmer, right? Like, not so much, like, JavaScript. I think that linting, like, tends to catch a lot of things where you're like, oh, wow, there's totally a second parameter for parseInt and things like that that, you know, maybe you don't consider day-to-day in using the language. But
yeah. Is there a second parameter?
Yeah, apparently. According to JSHint, and I can't get that warning to turn off, so it must be really important.
Yeah.
I like the idea of tests that block your... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to explain parseInt, but never mind. It's not worth it.
No, that's the good stuff. That's why people listen to this show. So
no.
We're the parseInt podcast now, changing the name.
I like the idea of tests blocking a push. You know, like, you write these Jasmine tests. If it fails one, you can't push, and then you got to go fix it and deal with it, or update your test if the test was wrong or whatever, so that it's this block for pushing bad stuff. That's what I want at CodePen, because it's even me constantly will break something. Like, I had a little one about, like, I had a div, and inside the div was a span and a UL. Yeah, and if you clicked on the anchor tag, it would open the UL, which were like siblings. But the clickable area was too small, and we got the support request that was like, oh, I can't click on this whole button. I can only click on, like, just the middle part of it. I'm like, okay, we should fix that. So, I see the JavaScript. We're binding to the anchor event, not the whole div. So I changed what we bind it to. But that screwed up all kinds of stuff, because anywhere you click then in that UL – it would bubble up and trigger the toggle that was happening to see that menu. So it broke this entire menu. And that's the kind of thing a unit test could catch and fix. Mm-hmm. So now that we broke it, we made a test for that. Now we can't break it anymore.
Because your system now prevents you from checking in unpassing code, right?
No, but that would be cool if it did. That's what I want. That's where I want to get to. And that's what sounds like Etsy has, which I'm jealous of.
That's cool. Well, I think we exhausted that question. Hopefully, Rachel, that'll work for you, and you'll submit another question in the future.
Yeah. Look at Jasmine, right. Rachel, if you've never seen or heard of this ever. That would be the standard one to look at for unit testing anyway, right?
Yep.
Rebecca Murphy has a lot of great stuff, too, like Mocha and there's more. But, yeah.
Let's do this one by Tommy Carlman. I'm sure I ruined that. I've used GitHub kind of like I used to use SVN a few years ago, just push and pull. I know there's a lot more features like branches, etc. I've been thinking about using those, but I'm not exactly sure why I should use them or what I would get out of them. Can you guys educate me about this a little bit? I feel like we all use Git a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what's the what does Git have over SVN? Take it, Divya.
So the way I understood Git was that you could do micro changes. Like you can, so suppose you have a bunch of text that you've added. So you can choose different lines in that text to commit and do different commits of different lines of text. So you could say exactly what this specific change means. And it doesn't have to be the whole set of changes you've made to the file. You could pick and choose the changes and then make specific commits like that. I don't think that's possible with SVN CVS. I think Git also has this idea of like a local Git repository that then pushes to another repo on the server or whatever, which is slightly different from SVN. Because you can make local branches and local, I don't know. This is a long time ago when I was trying to learn Git that this was explained to me, but then I forgot. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, the distributed thing is yes. useful, like not having to look for a canonical version on a server and being tied to that all the time.
Yeah. And that's branches good. Are pretty useful, I think. I use it all the time, yeah.
That would be like the first thing that you would start using on Git that would be different. I think SVN, to be fair, has branching now that's better. Or it always used to, but it was kind of a mess. Whereas if you make a branch on Git, which is, you know, think of a repository and there's all the files that make up a website. And then you make a branch, it's an exact copy of that, of all of that stuff, only you just name it something different, just trivially different. Be like, I'm going to add a new feature called Super Pop-Ups. So I'm going to name this branch Super Pop-Ups. And then you work in that, and you're not like polluting the main branch. So everybody else can continue working on this kind of main branch, and it's no big deal. And you can work on the site in your little secret side branch, and that's okay. And come the day that you want to like merge that baby back into master, Git makes that real, real easy. You just kind of do it, and it works. And SVN didn't have that for a long time, at least. Woofoo.
They had it when I used it most recently, which was about five years ago, I think.
They've had branching for a long time.
It wasn't as easy to manage, though. Like, somebody, like, an expert had to manage it. And, like, it wasn't like you could just, like, create branches on your own box and, like, be like, I'm going to put this stuff over here. And God forbid you tried to copy anything with it.
Yeah.
So it's had it for a long time, but it just was not as like, easy cheesy as
I also like the fact that there's only .git folder in the parent directory, and it doesn't pollute the subdirectories with dot.
Yeah, a little dot SVN in every single thing. That's another thing that SVN fixed. So if we're trying to be fair, that's how SVN works now too.
The way I was explained to it is like Git is like the branching and stuff like that. It's actually just like little bookmarks and checkpoints that it kind of maintains in that .git folder. While like SVN, when you want to like branch something, it would take like 50 hours. That's an extreme, but because it copies the whole tree and all those little SVN repos that are all managing every commit ever. And then, so it just ends up being this. For me, it's like Git is way more inefficient. It's just like, oh, cool, I'm doing this. Oh,
yeah,
I'll switch back to the other one because I don't care, you know? And it's like not a file system. It's more just like I'm just telling Git to do something different, you know? I like that.
Yeah.
So,
plus, Tommy, with Git, you get GitHub, and that's a big deal.
SVN Hub, not as popular.
I'm definitely not a Git master, but I work in, you know, my first big, you know, I mean, we moved WooFoo over to Git, and SurveyMonkey was on Git and stuff. But even at the time, I wasn't as good as I am now. And like kind of managing the CodePen project is super awesome on GitHub. Every single little feature we do, we just branch off master, and we treat master kind of sacredly. You know, don't try not to work directly off of master. And then we can set up this thing that's like any commit that goes to master automatically goes to a staging server. So you can just commit and then go look at staging and see if it's okay, which is a mimic, which is sweet. And then your pushing is all it is moving master to the live site, you know. So all the work that you do is in a feature branch, and I don't know, it just feels good. It's like a good way to work.
Yep.
Very cool. Nice.
Let's do lynda.com. They have, so if you go to lynda.com/shoptalk and sign up, you get a week for free, which is pretty cool. On it, you can search around, find something to learn. You couldn't watch all these videos in your lifetime, in several lifetimes if you want to. There's over 77,000 videos on lynda.com. Starts at $25 a month, gets you unlimited access to all of those. Works on all your mobile devices as well as just sitting in front of the computer if you want. There's all kinds of web learning stuff, of course, but there's more than that, you know, but stuff about running a business and doing audio-video training and 3D and photography and stuff like we were just talking about. You can learn all about Git and version control and stuff. That's all on lynda.com. They have this optimized mobile site, which is pretty cool. So yeah, check out lynda.com/shoptalk and get the first 7 days free. So thanks for sponsoring. Let's do it.
All right.
What do you got?
Next question. So this is a question. It's from Zolt Pence, and I think it could spark a whole new era and genre of Holy Wars here. So here we go.
Hey, I'm building a website right now, and there is a navigational bar on the top, and it includes a search bar, and I was wondering if semantically, is it supposed to be, like the search bar, is it supposed to be a navigational feature or not? Like in HTML5, you know, you include the navigational links in a nav tag, and I was just wondering if a search field, like a form, is supposed to be inside a navigational part of the site. Thanks.
All right. So does a search field, like a form search, does that belong in a nav tag semantically?
Oh, boy. Okay.
I'm going to go to Divya on this one. Spec writer or spec reader.
Well, I wrote a blog post on Smashing Magazine, which I said, our pointless pursuit of semantic value, which would tell you.
That you just don't care, like don't stay up all night thinking about this. Instead, you should probably do some work.
Yes.
So that's your final answer?
Yeah, basically.
I would say no, it doesn't. And I would say that because the question, if I could restate it, meaning that if there's a form and it links to search, you know, you type in a search term and hit a button, yes, it does take you somewhere. You know, it's kind of like navigation, but it's not like it's navigation that's always different. And I think of like, you know, these fancy screen readers that read and can see a nav tag and like do helpful things to the people using the screen reader with the stuff that's in a nav tag would probably not want your search form in there. It's looking for a list of links to make more accessible, you know, to put somewhere easier to zoom over to for a screen reader person. That form element is probably, and I'm just, I don't know, maybe it is, but I would say. Well,
but isn't stupid. Search a form of navigation?
I mean,
I'm actually, go ahead.
Screen readers is optimized to navigate the majority of websites, which have been built without any concern for standards or what the spec mean or whatever. Because most of the websites out there are not compliant. They are pretty much just use tags because they exist. So, I mean, and screen readers are pretty smart about that. But that doesn't mean we should not comply to standards. But I just want to make sure that we don't over-optimize just for standards and spend hours thinking whether it's a nav or a UL or a link or a div or a button. I don't know. So.
Yeah, I agree. Especially because if you pick the one that you think they should use, sometimes you'll just be going along your day and you'll find out that the spec changed to fix it to be what you used.
Yeah.
Because they're finding out that authors are doing it in that way.
Yeah.
A couple people in the chat said, why don't you use the search tag? Which is weird, as I didn't know that existed. And if Google around and there isn't one, right?
Yeah, I don't think there is one.
No,
but maybe if you started
input
using
type
one.
Equals search and aria role equals search. So
I mean, if browsers give something or add value to the tag, then use it. Like H1, H2, P, all of that, browsers do like provide something out of the box. And you know, if you're using section or article, browsers don't provide something out of the box. And I'm not sure. Other than for your readability of your code, I don't see any specific value in it.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds reasonable. So none of us really care if the search field is in a nav tag or not.
I would probably just say don't. It doesn't matter. I don't know. It just seems like it's a separate component. Like you have a navigation component and a search component. So split them up. Decouple that mess.
Yep.
All right. Well, cool. Let the holy war begin on that question.
It was a good. I don't mean to dismiss the question because it's interesting. It's just those are the things that are like, I don't know. Just do something and move on.
Yep.
Patrick Morton asks, let's do this one. We gotta make sure to honor a stop time this week for several of us. The company I work for uses a lot of JavaScript-based page manipulation to show and hide content. They use display none, you know, to show some content, they set display block. To hide it, they set display none via JavaScript. The content on these pages is getting ignored by screen readers, and the company has an accessibility mandate. I suggested positioning the content off screen instead. So I think even in the HTML5 boilerplate, there is a class that comes standard in the CSS called visually hidden, and it does something like position absolute and negative left and top values that kick it off the page so it can't be seen, I think. They think this would hurt search engine rankings or get them blacklisted by Google if they do this. I haven't found much information to support this concern. What do you think?
Is this a black hat SEO question?
It's a secret black hat question.
No, I think there was Google... one of the SEO guys at Google, what is it? Matt Cutts.
Matt Cutts, probably.
Yes. He wrote a blog post on using display none or whatever. I'm not sure. On hiding content. And I can't find, I'm sure I'll be able to find if I look for it, about this specific thing. So he said it doesn't hurt. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So the display none is okay. The problem
is there. No, not display none. I think, you know, the image replacement techniques that people use. Like, I think he was talking about that.
Text in that -99.
Yeah.
Right. That makes sense. That, you know, it's like if you're doing something, if you're trying to be gross. Oh, here's Paul in the chat room. The Google position on this is that if you're doing something malicious to hide content, then you want to show bots. If you're doing something just to use.
Negative thing there.
He corrected himself.
Paul just said you can totally game Google.
Well, I think it's the like don't be a dick rule or whatever. Like if you're just trying to hide some content because you need to show an image there, just do it and it's not a big deal. If you're doing it over and over and putting like crazy, you know, keywords all over in that, Google will be able to know that you're being a jerk and it will hurt you. This is slightly different in that I am imagining there's modules all over the screen and you're like clicking buttons to hide and show them, and there's like tabs, like perhaps there's tabs on this page, right? There's three tabs and there's three news articles and three different tabs. Two of them are display none, so that's a bummer because they're having problems with their accessibility, people not being able to get to those other two articles hidden in a tab because they're display none. But or alternatively, they could have used this HTML5 boilerplate visually hidden class and solved it, but they're just worried that they're gonna get hurt by that. And I guess, are we just landing on saying that no, they won't be hurt by that and it's better for accessibility? It's like a double win.
Yeah.
I mean, I think display none's fine. I mean, you may, if it, like, your content is totally inaccessible, then that's maybe an architecture problem. Like, you need to use Aria Live on the, like, tab div that you're updating. That would be the big thing you'd have to do. There's also, there's like a role equals tab or something. I'm looking for it here. I just saw it yesterday. Didn't know it existed.
Really?
So
that kind of explains or dictates that this is a tab, and tabs usually hide and show content. And
Yeah. So, and you can, I don't know that anyone really uses it right now, but you know, it's a option. So, yeah.
Good. And so tell your bosses you're not going to get blacklisted from Google, probably either way, but...
I mean, unless your content contains all the spammy links and whatnot, but...
Right.
If not, yeah.
All right.
Well, good luck out there.
Good stuff. Good question, Patrick. Do you want to take us home, Dave?
Yeah, let's do one more question, or one more, or should we wrap it up?
Super quick if we do.
Let's see. My question, here's from Adam Davidson. I think it's a really quick question. My question is, what do you guys recommend for validating HTML and CSS? I feel the current W3C validator flags a lot of code that's needed for the layout. I also have a lot of website with error messages due to browser extensions using CSS3. Is there a more friendly service to tune in or in tune with CSS3 and all that? Also, which sites or what process would you recommend the best place for minimizing HTML, CSS, and JavaScript files?
Oh God, too long.
Okay, well,
I'll answer the first part. Validation is not important. You just need to make sure your tags are closed appropriately or not. And I'm sure there are extensions and plugins for your code editors that will make sure that, you know, that happens. Every time you save or automatically, like Sublime Text does that, highlighting of your brackets in your CSS and stuff like that. So I think you have to make sure the CSS you write is correct so that browsers can render it correctly. But validation is not the be-all and end-all of your code.
I like it. I think we'd just leave it at that. And then minimizing, I would just use SAS. So there you go. That's the end of that. Cool. Let's wrap it up, Divya. We know you got to go, so we'll start with you first. How can people follow you, give you money? How does that work?
Nobody needs to give me money, but okay. Well, you could contribute to a charity by buying my book on HTML5 boilerplate. All the money
brand
that
new, isn't it?
Yeah. It's on Amazon and stuff, and all the money goes to making mosquito nets. I think it's being tested somewhere. And, well, it's a good idea if you like it. But other than that, you can follow me on Twitter at Divya, D-I-V-Y-A.
Awesome. Yeah. And, Garen, how can people follow you and give you money?
They can follow me. I'm on Twitter at GarenM, G-A-R-A-N-N-M. and I don't really need a lot of money either. They could send Dave money, and then he can buy me a beer after the next Austin JS.
That works just fine. Yep. I'll accept money. Buy a Shop Talk Show t-shirt, shopdogshow.com/store. There you go. And then I'll convert that to beer to give to Garen. This works out perfect. And then be sure to subscribe to fripfrap.com. Fripfrap.com.
Fripfrap.io.
And it's frapfrip on Twitter, so there's plenty of things to remember.
At frapfrip on Twitter, yes.
Awesome. Yeah. Be sure to check that out. Thank you guys so much for coming into the chat room. Paul or Irish for giving us an actual answer. That was very good. And then, we really appreciate it. And, subscribe in iTunes, rate us a 5, rate FripFrap a 5. And, visit the store. Follow us on Twitter @ShopTalkShow. And Chris.
ShopTalkShow.com.